anyone who's going to be involved in fundraising, I think, really needs to have their own definition of fundraising so they can understand what that means. It gives them kind of a Magna Carta, if you will, about how they pursue what they do. And you may not be the chief fundraiser or development person in your organization, but I think everyone, I'll get to this later, it's kind of my one of my soapbox main points, that everyone in your ministry needs to have a good foundational understanding of what it means to be about fundraising and what that looks like. And we'll get to that later. Here's some other common definitions. Development, fundraising, obviously. Advancement is one that's used in the United States quite a bit, related to secondary and post-secondary education situations, universities, colleges, that sort of thing. Something that's popped up in the United States in the last 5 years or so is now, instead of being the director of fundraising, I'm the director of philanthropy. And it kind of gives a different, you know, kind of feel to that, maybe trying to hide the fact that we're kind of inviting people to invite the resources. Friendraising is one I hear very common, and I've heard that across multiple cultures. South Africa, Rwanda, Europe, just other people use that as kind of, okay, we're raising funds, but we're developing friendships and relationships and partnerships with people who want to have some sort of connection to our ministry. That connection may or may not be funds. It may be volunteer time. It may be talent. It may be something that they have, or an interest or a connection that they have. So other ways to do that. I love the one I learned about 3 years ago, resource mobilization. And I stole it from Tom, who's in the corner of the room here, is a colleague of mine. We worked together on several projects. And it's the idea that God will mobilize all the resources that we need, not just the financial, but the volunteers, the talent, the infrastructure, other things we need. So I like the prayer support. So it kind of gives a bit broader view sometimes of what's being mobilized, right? What resources are being mobilized. So any and all those, I will use them interchangeably. I have friends who have very specific, different definitions of all those. I'm not that guy. They all kind of run together for me. But those are some other definitions. So one of those handouts is taken from a book called The Debt-Free Church. It's a kind of an older book now. It's probably, in fact, might be out of print. But the authors actually came back and said, here are some scriptural perspectives and examples of how God resourced his kingdom in the Old and New Testament. So you can see off the handout, they have actual the scriptures listed, building the tabernacle, restoring the temple, caring for those who are displaced during Pentecost. All and there's just examples. There are other ways as well. But how did God resource his people, his prayerful people, and actual tangible resources? You know, in the tabernacle, in the temple, it wasn't so much finance as it was crafts, product, linen, poles, you know, tent poles. But everybody came together to do that, right? So just think about different ways that that God has resourced us. One of my good friends who's retired now from the world of fundraising, Jerry Twombly, Jerry came to the very first forum and taught the fundraising network, and for about the next 20 years, he did the same. Spent 50 years working in the field of fundraising and development. And this was his definition, just like you all had definitions that he came up with. And we'll kind of step through this. So he thinks that development or fundraising, all the things that we do to build rational relationships with others. Now, everybody likes that definition until they see that word rational. What does that mean? And I think for us, as we think about this and the way I've kind of internalized it, is so many people come to our ministries through an emotional experience. They heard a testimony. They met someone whose life has been changed. They met a young person who, because of what you do, fundamentally had a life change and a shift in life because they invited Jesus into life, and now they're in a discipleship relationship, right? So many people come to us through this emotional situation. But the emotions go away really quickly, right? And I have an example from my own life. I was sitting in a big fundraising banquet for an organization back in the U.S. a couple of 3 years ago. And I'm at a table with like three other couples. And they're magnificent speakers and incredible testimonies of life change. And literally people are almost crying because of the way that God's Holy Spirit is moving. And then they did the invitation and people kind of gave their pledges. And then all of a sudden this couple gets a note, a text from their babysitter that their kid had fallen down the stairs and there's a lot of blood at the bottom of the stairs. I can assure you, whatever emotions they had that had an affinity toward this organization were gone in a heartbeat. And they were in the car and took off. Everybody's okay. But just an example of how fleeting the emotion can be. So as people get excited about organizations, how do we take that excitement and make it intentional, make it rational. So they join us for more than a year at a time, or they join us for more than just the event that they were a part of. So a lot of people look at me and say, Craig, that's a stupid definition because they don't understand what rational means. I'm okay with that. I won't be hurt and offended if you decide not to use rational. So for you, that might mean a meaningful relationship or a reciprocal relationship, because there's two things happening here, two people involved, two parties involved, a significant relationship or an intentional relationship. So how do we move the emotion to intention so people really feel that they're not just so connected to us because of an emotional experience, but they know what we do. They know what our vision is. They know what God has called us to do, and we can demonstrate how God is working in people's lives through our ministry and through our organization. So that's just another definition. This is the one that I stole from Tom. Helping the church and God's people understand and respond to his work through prayer, works of service, and giving. Perhaps a little broader view than just the financial piece of that. So this is where I talk about partnerships with people, not just transactions and contributions. Be partners in prayer, partners in service and volunteerism, partnerships and stewardship. But I think over the years, I've come to the realization that I think there's another part of fundraising that we don't talk about quite as much. It's there, we just don't either acknowledge it or pay much attention to it, and that's the ministry of fundraising. We always think that people are ministering to our organization as they give us their time, talent, and treasure. But are there ways that we can give back to them and minister to the people who are serving as partners to our organization? And I think that's super important. I think that was really borne out through some of the pandemic COVID situations, where many people, organizations I knew, they couldn't go out and meet with donors, they couldn't have gatherings anymore, and they just got on the phone and said, let's start calling our partners and checking in to see how they are. And that became a marvelous ministry of prayer, of connectedness, of community. So it went way beyond, you know, the amount of the donation and really into community they were building because of this, the restrictions they had in terms of meeting people. So I think there is a ministry of development. So if you buy my assumption that fundraising involves relationships and it's a rational relationship, it's a two-way dynamic, then we as fundraisers, as people in charge of resource mobilization for organizations and ministries, need to figure out a way to start to give back, right? And make sure that's a two-way, not just always give me the contribution, then how can I give back to you in a way that builds community and helps spur on your discipleship? That was mentioned in the inner conversations as well. So how does that work? I'm gonna give you a couple of different phrases. I hope you'll kind of memorize and remember when you leave. If you're involved in fundraising and resource mobilization, development, whatever you want to call it, you're going to have to steward the donation. Do people know how you're going to use their money? Is it being used authentically? Are you reporting transparently? Can people ask you, so exactly how is this fund going to be used? And you can share that. Now, not down to the penny, not down to the nth degree, but in broad strokes, here's the contribution, here's how people have given to us, and here's how it's being used in a way. So that just to be really upfront, honest, and transparent, and candid. And somebody has the best conversations with people that ask really hard questions. Tell me more about how you do this. Tell me more about how this contribution is going to be used. What sorts of things can I expect? You know, if I were an investor, what kind of return on investment would I have for this contribution? So I think it's really important to kind of be thinking about that. We need to steward the donation in a very God-honoring, authentic way. I like to flip the coin, though. We also need to steward the donor. And what does that look like? How do we make sure that as they partner with us, that we can partner with them? How can we pray for them? I've got an organization I used to work with in the United States. It's a pregnancy care center. And their staff team gets together every Monday morning and they have a prayer time. And they have a text thread where over the weekend they say, our team's praying on Monday. What prayer needs do you have and how can we intercede on your behalf? It's all confidential, so people can share what they want. But the people who support them and are partners with them know after about 4 months or 5 months that this team sits down every week and they pray for us. Ah, how cool is that? And I know if there's something going on in my life, I could send them a note and say, would you please pray for this or whatever. Great way to kind of steward that donor. How do we help them achieve their spiritual goals? How do we help deepen their discipleship as they are a partner with us? Whether it's partnered out financially, partners, a volunteer, whatever. Here's another quote I want you to think about: stewarding the donation, stewarding the donor, and leading with your vision. Every ministry has need. Every nonprofit has need. And I'm not saying those needs aren't important, because they are. Because ultimately, as a ministry, we're going to help fill those needs and support those needs, whether it's through evangelism, discipleship, church planning, humanitarian aid, whatever. But we need to lead with our vision. So we need to say, here's what God's doing. Here's how he's working. Here's where we hope to end up. It's aspirational. It's future. And then, would you like to come join God where he's working through our organization? Would you prayerfully consider what that might look like in terms of your final support, financial support, your volunteer support, your time? So for me, it's never a, you know, I'm going to sit down with a cup of coffee with someone and ask him for a certain amount of dollars. It's, here's what's happening. Here's how God's working. Here's where we're headed. Here's the vision that God has given us. And you can join that vision where he's joining us if you'd like to, and if you feel like God's directing you to do that, and then kind of move on through that. But always lead with a vision. Everybody has a need, and then people get tired of needs. But if they can see that you have a solution and a vision, and how God is already moving your organization toward that vision through changed lives, that makes all the difference for someone who's going to say, wow, not only am I excited about what you guys are doing, I can really buy in from an intention standpoint. So that emotion goes way beyond just the, oh, you guys are doing good stuff, to, wow, I want to be a part of this. And how can I join in? That makes sense? Okay. I love this verse. But I think a lot of us flip it. A lot of us think that we kind of, our heart, our treasure follows our heart. I think really our heart follows, you know, it's the other way around. Where's my church? Am I treasuring my finances? Am I treasuring my house? Am I treasuring my vehicle? That's where my heart is. So how do we find out where the heart of our donors might be at any given time? So how do we help them grow? Kind of how do we help them on their road to discipleship by how they invest their funding and their time and their energy? So for me, it's just, it's a bit of a refocus, or just a bit of a re-twist or adjustment on how most of us think about fundraising and development. Here are some real practical steps. Bless you. And this is one of the things that in the United States we call it a soapbox, where you get up on top of an old box of soap, and so you're above higher than everybody else in the city square and the town square, and you start to get on your soapbox and talk about what's important to you. This is one of mine. Everyone in the ministry and the organization needs to understand the basic principles of fundraising and development, because there are so many different ways that we're going to trip over ourselves if we're not all on the same page. Give you an example. More than once in my life, I've sent a contribution to an organization, and you know, it could be a small amount, could be a larger amount, but then someplace behind the curtain in their computer database, they have all my information, but it wasn't entered correctly, or the person that was keying in the thank you letter, you know, didn't do it right. So I get this note that comes back. Instead of coming back to Greg and Lynn Long, it comes back to John and Julie, who are my neighbors, because someone keyed it in wrong. So all of a sudden, my enthusiasm about having a partnership with the organization just went out the window, because I wasn't treated with respect and was acknowledged for what I'd offered. Other things can happen along those lines too. But it's just, so I'm not blaming the finance people. I always say that, and then people get mad at me because I'm blaming the accountant. I don't say that illustration to do that. But I think it's important to understand that everybody in the organization needs to understand what that role is in terms of our expectations for people, and then how we treat them as partners or as potential partners moving in. I want the board of directors to be involved. I wish I had a nickel for every time I was talking to somebody and said, oh, I'd love to be a board of director of that ministry. Just don't ask me to raise any money. In the United States and in many other places around the world, the board of directors has fiduciary financial obligations for their organization. We've done work in Indonesia. In Indonesia, they have three different boards for every nonprofit. Three. We have trouble in the United States keeping people on one board, let alone three, but that's how the government set it up. They have three separate boards for each organization of different players. But I do know, and there's lots of studies that bear this out, that the first time someone gives you a gift or a contribution, that if a board of director member writes them a thank you note or calls them on the phone to express appreciation, the likelihood of a second gift is exponentially higher and exponentially sooner than if they don't get that. So if a board member says, oh, I don't want to ask people for money, fine, have them send thank you notes, have them make phone calls. You can script the phone call for the board member. But someone says, hey, I'm so-and-so, I'm a board member, notice you just gave to us, thank you so much. This is how we think the money's going to be used. Do you have any questions about our organization? And would love to stay in touch with you in the future. Here's my phone number, here's the phone number of the president or the managing director. And it's a very simple call, and most because that's a call you want to make because it makes you feel good, because the people are receptive on the other end, right? So I want the board of directors to be involved as well. Really good planning is important. I talked about, you know, people always lead with their need instead of their vision. So many times we are in crisis mode as organizations because they haven't planned properly. And that puts us in a crisis where we're having to drive, be driven by need instead of being driven by vision. So there's some good solid planning practices. It's easy to search on the internet in terms of strategic planning for nonprofits or for ministries. You'll just get hundreds and hundreds of hits on processes and ways to do that. Then I'm going to talk about the attitude continuum real quick. It's one of my favorite things. So I think that everybody in relationship to my ministry that I'm responsible for is someplace on a continuum or someplace on the scale. We all like to think that we're going to start kind of at neutral here in the middle, but we don't stay at neutral usually. So the two ends of the continuum, on the positive side, is euphoria. People are just so excited about your organization, they can hardly stand it. They're telling everybody about the organization and what you do and what God is working on. So that's the one end. The other end, unfortunately, is cynicism. There's nothing you can do, say, or demonstrate that's going to change this person's mind about the value of your ministry or how you work and how you operate. So those are the two ends. But a lot of us find ourselves someplace in the middle. People start at neutral, but maybe they come discouraged. Maybe they wanted to be part of a team and weren't invited to join it. Maybe they kind of went to a meeting expecting something and it didn't happen for them. I think about this many times. I'm an elder, was formerly an elder in my local church, and always had these conversations about people who wanted to be in a small group and it didn't work out for them because the time wasn't right or the day wasn't right or whatever. And if people are discouraged enough, then they tend to get frustrated. And if they get frustrated, in my experience, they start telling other people. That's just human nature. I'm going to start telling you what's not working, what's not right. And it may not be to the person that I have the offense with. It may just be somebody else, right? Then if I'm frustrated enough, I kind of become apathetic. Well, I'll never get in that small group. I'll never get invited to that missions trip. I'll never, whatever. And then to the cynicism piece. And my experience is if people get to the frustration, apathy kind of level with your organization, it's really hard to get them to turn around and kind of move the other direction. On the other hand, people that start at neutral and have a good experience get encouraged. That was a great sermon. That was a really good Bible study I sat through. That was really neat. And then that kind of gets them hopeful they're going to have some more of that. You know, that was a great, you know, kind of intro to the book of Acts. Let's go deeper for this next session that we're going to do. And they go, okay, let's do that. And they get real enthusiastic about that. And again, they get kind of hope and enthusiasm. That's when they start telling other people, talking to other people about your ministry in terms of how excited they are to see what God's doing in the life of your ministry. And they get to euphoria. Now, no one stays at euphoria for a long time. But it's really cool, I got to tell you, it's really cool when you have someone reach that phase with your ministry, at least for a brief moment. It's really kind of fun. I had a wonderful, I call them arm wrestling conversations with my senior pastor at my church. And I was introducing this concept to him. We were kind of doing this back and forth about whether he agreed with this. And that's good. He's a dear friend. And this was the statement that caught him up. And I said, people are on this continuum based on what you've told them or what you've done to them or how you've treated them. So as ministry leaders, it's on us to help figure out and then help people along this attitude continuum. And he stopped and he kind of looked at me, and his argument was that everybody has an individual responsibility for how they interact and how they responded to those things. And I don't disagree with that. But I think overall, it is our responsibility as ministry leaders to figure out where people are in this continuum and then how do we help them by communicating accurately, by helping them understand the expectations that we have for them as donors or as partners to move forward on that. That makes sense? You want to arm wrestle about that with me? I'm happy to. I'm good with that. And I can pretty quickly, and I've been kind of thinking through this for a long time, I can pretty quickly walk into a room or a meeting, and just in a few minutes, I can almost figure out where people all are on the scale. I don't tell them I'm doing that, obviously. Oh, you're on discouragement. I don't do that. But I can kind of pretty much figure out what people are in the room based on the scale, depending on the conversation. And I would never take this in front of a donor and say, where are you? Don't do that, please. Just know it's a tool to kind of think through what other sorts of things are happening in this person's life or happening in terms of our ministry that I need to kind of either clarify, change, alter expectations so I can make sure I'm meeting them where they are. That make sense? Because my conversation with someone who's apathetic is going to be very different than someone who's hopeful or enthusiastic.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And I would guess working with students and young people, you probably see both extremes of the continuum in about a 5-minute time span with some young people, right?
You mean non-believers or believers?
Either.
Yeah.
For 14-year-olds, they just go back and forth, right? Okay. So I gave you some organizational practical steps, board, making sure people are on the same page, your organization. Here's some things that you can do, and kind of next steps for you. I think that God created us with two ears and one mouth for a reason. I think we're supposed to listen at least twice as much as we talk. So I'm talking to a group of partners, giving a presentation, sitting down one-on-one with someone, I want to ask questions and kind of figure out where they are. What's on their heart? What do they know about my organization? What don't they know? Because I sometimes walk in with a big assumption about what people understand about my ministry, and they may not be anywhere close to that. So what does it look like? So questions like, how is God working in your life? What's God teaching you as you give to us and to other ministries? Those are interesting conversations to have, because some people say, well, I don't really know. I'll have to go back and pray about that. And some was like, oh, I was having a prayer time last week, and your ministry came to mind, and just realized I hadn't given you a check for a while, so I wanted to send you a contribution, so that's why I dropped it in the mail, in the post to you. How can we pray for you? One of those three documents in that link, in that URL that I sent you, is a list of questions to ask to help build relationships with potential donors. And I'm still trying to play with AI. So it was a ChatGTP query that I did. And I said, give me the 10 top questions to ask to build a relationship with donors. So I made sure donor was in there, I made sure relationship was in there, and I made sure question was in there. So one of those downloads is simply what ChatGTP kicked out. Modify those any way you want. But those are the sorts of questions I would start to kind of ask. I wouldn't ask all 10, obviously, but sort the kind of figure out who I'm meeting with, and then who are the people that, the kind of questions I can ask of those people as I sit down with them. That's like my second ChatGTP query. So I'm kind of a slow learner when it comes to. Okay, here's a homework assignment for you. There'll be a test. I'm gonna call and email each of you in about a month's time and follow up. That's not true. But I want you to kind of think about this idea of ministering or stewarding the donor. What does that now look like for you as you think about this? So I want you to think about maybe one or two people you could meet with in the next 4 weeks, 8 people total, maybe. Ideally, a personal conversation, in-person conversation, although Zoom would work, phone would work too. When I usually talk about this with U.S. donors, all of a sudden they start thinking about the highest level donors. That's just something that U.S. people do. I'm not saying that's wrong, but I think there are probably a lot of other faithful donors that don't have a lot of zeros behind their contribution that might also benefit from this kind of conversation. I also suspect that to kind of get started on this process, to asking these sorts of questions, it might be helpful to make sure that it might be someone that you know, you already have a bit of a relationship with. So there's already some continuity there, there's already some connectedness there, instead of maybe someone who's brand new to you. Have a board member join you, or have another leader in your ministry join you. I always joke about one-on-one meetings being really good. I think two-on-one is even better. Because if I'm carrying on the conversation or making an invitation for someone, there's someone else there who can kind of read the response, see the nonverbals that I'm not paying attention to because I'm engaged in this conversation perhaps. And I want it to be a personal conversation. It can be phone, it can be Zoom, it can be after church if you're going to the same church together. But in addition to whatever emails, newsletters, texts, WhatsApps you send out. So kind of set aside some time to do that. And one of those downloads is, on one side of the piece of paper, is just 8 blank lines for you to list the names of the people that you're considering kind of practicing ministering to them, practicing the ministry of fundraising in terms of relationship building, interpersonal relationships. So I want you to take about 5 or 10 minutes. I want you to kind of maybe 30 seconds of prayer, and then just start thinking, who are the people that I want to talk with and connect with in the next 30 days when I get back home to have this conversation about our ministry, about our organization in a way that is a reciprocal, rational, intentional conversation as opposed to always asking for the dollars.